New.
This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1042, and it's the Relevant Podcast. Here in Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What up?
And from Austin, Texas, author, speaker, and podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Hey, Derek, I didn't ask you. Did you win any Grammys this year? I know you got a couple.
Nah, not this year.
It's like, you got enough. You don't need more. You don't want to get greedy.
Nah, so we, this year, you know, I took a couple years off, so I was blessed to be able to kind of get some rest, but the new music that I'm working on, I'm hoping to carry home a few with that, so we'll see what happens.
Thank you there.
Awesome.
Derek, what was your Grammy stake this year, man? Like, I feel like, I know it's a broad statement, but I feel like there was a lot of interesting storylines, you know, some controversies. You know, I thought there was the watching Maverick City perform, like, the controversy around the Sam Smith performance, or, you know, what was your take on the night in general as an artist and a Grammy winner?
So I actually enjoyed I didn't get to watch the whole show, but what I watched the show, I actually enjoyed it. I think that people have to understand what the Grammys is. And number one, the Grammys is a collective of artists that are voting on one another's stuff. Artists and industry people that are voting on one another's thing. So whenever an artist that you are like, yo, we're surprised that this artist didn't win, 9 times out of 10, it's because the people that love their music either haven't registered to vote, be a Grammy voting member, or they didn't get the support that they should have got on the ground floor. So it's not as like a lot of times people are like, oh man, well, it's just, you know, the Grammys are hating on this person. It's like, nah, like if you want your person to win, you have to vote. Like that's just how that goes. So I think some of the times it looks like people are getting stiffed. It's just because they didn't get the groundswell of on that way. As far as the performances, I know people are kind of spazzing over the Sam Smith thing, but I'm like, the name of the song is called Unholy, and it's about debauchery. Yes, it's going to be risque. Like, that's what it is. And I think maybe I might be different, but I've somewhat come to the concept that America is not this Christian nation that only puts out things for Christianity. It's like, no, the Grammys is a diverse it's a diverse group of people. So if there's an artist like Sam Smith who has a song like that that has blown up, there's clearly an appetite for that content, and the Grammys are going to put it on there as long as it doesn't violate any type of you know, laws or any type of restrictions, right? Censorship restrictions. So I thought it was a good night. Once you pull all of the, like, a lot of our controversies are just because things aren't what we want them to be. And I think once we start realizing, like, yo, it's not going to always be what we want. There's going to be some stuff. I mean, you got Unholy, but then you also had Maverick City Music perform, right? So it's like, I think the Grammys try to do a good job of trying to speak to everybody's world and try to give them all a little piece of the night. So, you know.
The other thing, too, is, like, the conflation of like, a theatrical, over-the-top performance depicting a version of some sort of ritual,
right,
is different than the actual ritual.
Right.
Like, I saw, like, a lot of people, like, there was literal Satan worship. I'm like, it was a performance. Like, everyone there's actors or dancers. I don't think they actually, you know, were, you know, supposing they were performing some actual cult ritual. It's theatrics. And to your point, Derek, like, it says more about, I think, culture and the appetite for that sort of performance than it does necessarily about the artist, who is probably, to a degree, it's a degree of trolling, it's a degree of opportunism,
absolutely,
it's a degree of artistic expression. Like, the backlash was the intention. Like, the, yes, more people kind of pearl clutch about it, the more they kind of have the desired effect. Yeah,
I don't know why that people have not, like, Lil Nas X, every time he's about to make a hit, Every time he's about to make a hit, he's like, who can I incite to push my music to the forefront? And he just picks on Christians. Like, that's what happens. He's like, all right, let me find out what's the thing I could do to get under their skin the most. And because a lot of Christians aren't.
They take the bait.
I don't know what the word is. I don't want to say mature. I don't think mature is the word. Maybe it's like technologically aware, nuanced, or whatever. Like, we don't understand the nuances of marketing or what's going on. Like, people just take the bait instantly, and it just shoots the song to number one. Mm-hmm. Because your fighting against it makes other people fight for it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The same thing happened with Chick-fil-A. Like, when people thought Chick-fil-A was being mean to the gay community, and they were like, we're boycotting Chick-fil-A. Well, guess what? Their sales shot through the roof because mm-hmm. the people that supported Chick-fil-A, they bought 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 chicken sandwiches. it's like, guys, we gotta just... Like, I literally tweeted, I said, the Grammys are lit. And some guy's like, oh. And then he didn't pick out Maverick City Music and say, yo, Maverick City Music was bad. He didn't pick out he just picked out the one most risque thing and said, oh, you're not a Christian because you are okay in this ritual. It's like, well, what if I just like Mavericks? What if I like that? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, look, he's wearing plastic devil horns. I don't think this is an actual satanic ritual here.
He got it at Party City. Yeah.
He got it at Home Goods.
They already got the Halloween stuff out.
Yeah.
And this is paraphrasing because it's been a while, but I remember reading an interview with Lil Nas X after the controversy surrounding his video, which depicted him descending to hell and like seducing and killing the devil.
Twerked on the devil.
but I remember him talking CGI about devil. It. And he felt like, you know, obviously it's well known now that you know, he's come out as gay. And, you know, but he said he was conflicted about that a long time because he was told his whole life he'd go to hell. And he's like, I got a backlash and people told me I was going to go to hell. So my response was to make a video where I literally go to hell. But in my version, I kill the devil. And it's like, look, artists are still permitted to be artists, even if you don't agree with their, you know, how they're expressing themselves. Even if someone finds it personally defensive, it's still a country where we celebrate free expression, even if that expression is someone else's experience and the way they choose to, you know, communicate that experience is controversial because maybe they're dealing with pain or maybe they're dealing with. You know, words that have been said to them that they want to figure out a way to contextualize through their art. I'm just saying, like, it's more nuanced than like, oh man, I guess we're just, you know, gonna take a break from award ceremonies now for a quick satanic ritual. Like, it's more nuanced than that, you know?
Interesting. It's interesting.
I think too, like, I just want to say this is like, I didn't see this, so I wasn't aware of this, but also, as like grown ups, if you have these strong feelings about stuff like that, guess what you can do?
Not watch it. Vote with your eyes.
You cannot watch it, and that's okay. Yeah. Like, and I also think that if someone is greatly offended by that, also like you don't have to watch it, but you can also hold the tension of like, oh, but I can also see like Maverick's playing there, or they're an artist, and we live in a free country where you can do whatever you want. So it is like this, like, how do you hold that tension of like, say that you don't want to promote the Grammy, then just don't, you know, and that's okay. But you don't have to look at someone else and say like, oh, you must not be a Christian because you watch the Grammys.
Guess what? By you posting the clip and saying this is so bad, you just are the best promotional arm for the Grammys there is. Like, the best way to not to let them know how you feel is to just totally ignore it. But that's really hard because people like to have opinions, you know?
So all that to say, Derek Minor loved the Grammys and worshiped Satan. All right, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later.
Wow.
Coming up later. We talked to Dante Stewart. He's a pastor and a writer. He is a leading voice in the conversation of the church and racial justice. It's an important topic, and we're excited to have him on today. We also, at the end of the show, you do not want to miss this game. It's called Worship or Wooing. where we're going to give you a lyric and you have to guess whether it's from a worship song or a romance song or a love song.
Oh, I love this.
That's coming up at the end of the show. But stay tuned right now. Up next, it's Slices. Listening to Girl House, the song is Cool Guy. They wrote that about me.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
Okay, it's time for
Slices.
What do you have, Jesse?
All right. So I know we're just coming off Super Bowl weekend, and a lot of people are talking football. We don't usually cover sports on this show, but there is a sports adjacent story that I really want all of your feedback on because I found this totally fascinating. Aaron Rodgers, he is the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers.
Is he still in the league? Dude. He hasn't retired yet?
Still in the league. He's 38, 39 years old, somewhere around there. So he's coming up on the end of his career. Mm-hmm. He's still, if he stays in the league, he still stands to make a few hundred million. It's over $100 million left on his contract.
Okay.
But
I'll stay in the league for that.
He's getting older. You know, football is a brutal sport. And, you know, and his relationship with the Packers has not been great. And so he's at a crossroads where he can either stay in the league, try to get a trade. He could retire and, or he could, you know, figure out some kind of buy. He's at a crossroads in his life. And like I said, he's kind of an interesting guy. He's known for being a little bit eccentric in some of his media appearances. You know, he publicly has talked about doing like an ayahuasca retreat where, you know, he tried to dabble with like DMT and psychedelics to try to just get clarity in his life. He seems like someone who's constantly searching.
He looks
for
like
ways.
A hippie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He really does. Yeah. And he's very open about he's someone you may remember a couple years ago, him and Rob Bell became really good friends. They were palling around together. Rob Bell watched the Super Bowl with him a couple years in a row. Like he's a spiritual searcher, Aaron Rodgers, if nothing else, in addition to being a multi-time MVP in the NFL. Well, he was recently on, a podcast, and he started talking about what his plans are to try to get clarity for this next season of life. And he's going to do a retreat, but it's called a darkness retreat. And it's 4 days, and you go to this, you know, kind of retreat place, which he described as like a very small house. And it is absolute darkness. And you are delivered food through like a slot in the door, but there's no noise. There is absolute silence. Absolute darkness. He said, you know, there is like, you know, because people had a lot of questions. So there is like a bathroom. You kind of have to feel your way there. Like some people who do these wear, I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago, like adult diapers in some cases. But the whole point is complete isolation, complete sensory deprivation for the course of a week.
A week?
Or the course of 4 days. I'm sorry, 4 days. That and 4 nights. And the idea is that when you emerge 4 days and 4 nights later, you will have had, you know, this really profound experience to get clarity in your life by silencing any stimulation. I thought this was absolutely fascinating and weird and kind of cool. Like, I know.
Sound like a scary movie to me.
It sounds, yeah, but I think different personalities would deal with it different ways. But the It also made me think about the principle of fasting, which is one that I feel like in the Christian tradition is a way of depriving yourself of something in an effort to kind of get clarity from God. But I also feel like fasting is sort of fallen out of, like, I never hear it talked about really, which isn't indicative of anything other than maybe just the circles I run in. You know, like that's an anecdotal sort of reference point. But I do feel like there is like Jesus went to the desert for and didn't eat or drink for what, 30 days? Like the core of what,
wasn't it 40?
Yeah, 40 days. Yeah. The core of what Aaron Rodgers wants to do in this darkness retreat is, I feel like, principled in an idea that we see throughout scripture. I don't know what he believes in terms of God or faith. He didn't mention anything kind of about that being an element. But what do you guys think about this idea of a darkness retreat? I'm kind of just interested in takes around the table on this.
Worst nightmare.
Really?
Good.
Worst nightmare. Solitude trips, silence things, I'm out. It's not fun for me. I don't like it. My husband's the exact opposite. Like, he's like yearning to go someplace alone for like 2 days and just like be silent. And I do not like that.
There's a reason why solitary confinement and isolation and deprivation of any stimulation is the worst form of criminal punishment. You know what I mean?
That's involuntary isolation. Like, this is a period where you're because he said the door's unlocked. You can walk out whenever you want. Like I said, Jesus himself chose isolation in preparation for his ministry. It can be a form of punishment, but it can be a form of you know, some sort of like spiritual discipline that people
seek
out.
He had company out there. He was talking to Satan left and right. You know, Satan was trying to tempt what?
Well,
Satan was trying to tempt him, and he was like saying no, thank you, and all this stuff.
It's so not
he
his wasn't company though.
He wasn't alone.
Jesse, I think this, for me personally, for me personally, it sounds like miserable. I would never choose it, but I do see that I see value in it. Like that's not, I'm not saying I see no value in it. Now, Aaron Rodgers, like, he can do whatever he wants and anyone can do that. But I do see value in like getting away, shutting out noise. People do that all the time. I'm going off social media. I'm going to go away for all day today and I'm going to spend some time hiking and praying and that kind of is the same thing. And so you do get clarity and open up to hear from God. I don't know what he's opening up to hear from, but I see value in it, but I don't want to go into any darkness retreat for 4 days.
Isn't it interesting though, that so many of these people who are, they have everything, they're incredibly wealthy, successful, whatever, but if there's like a spiritual restlessness in them. Mm-hmm. So many of them, I'm thinking of Russell Brand and others that turn to, you know, psychedelics and things like this to try and have a spiritual experience. You know, like the more they have, the more they realize it's not fulfilling and they're searching for something that will actually substantively impact their lives. And it's interesting to watch this happen. And it's interesting that he's being so open about it, you know?
I think it should be celebrated, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I think people have different kind of moral ideas about psychedelics and things like that, which I get and I think are valid concerns. But at the same time, I think we should live in a culture that absolutely celebrates spiritual searching, because there is a biblical principle that says, seek and you will find. Mm-hmm. You know, knock and I will answer. Like, there aren't stipulations to that. Like, God and the Holy Spirit frequently rewards people who genuinely seek after greater truth. Derek, jump in.
Time out, bro. He's not taking psychedelics in this thing, is he?
No, but he has.
He has. That's one of the.
I was like, that's definitely a horror movie. No lights. No, nothing.
Yeah, the psychedelics. Also, you just see, like, you feel cockroaches all over you in the dark.
Well, he did say from people he talked to that it simulates, after a while, you start hallucinating and you start having a similar experience as people who experiment with like psilocybin. Because it's access. Hold on.
I want to keep my brain. I want to see what's actually here. I don't want it to play tricks on me.
It is actually there. It's in your head. I mean, it's got to originate from somewhere. All I'm saying, I'm not encouraging anyone to take a bunch of mushrooms or something. That's not what I'm doing.
Please,
that's what I'm saying, you say. That's what I thought you said, Jesse.
No,
you before you joined Derek at the Grammys to watch the Satan worship service, you took mushrooms. That's what you're trying to finally
don't
confess.
Don't you guys me?
I just think that having a culture, even if maybe going a little far, getting a little weird here or there, like people are willing to go to incredible, incredible lengths to get spiritual clarity.
But isn't it interesting though that facsimile spiritual experience is something that Satan is using to twist and distort something that is built into all of us, a spiritual yearning, a crying out for God, a hole that only God can fill. And Satan is like saying, hey, but this experience over here and this experience over there kind of gives you the spiritual experience you're looking for, but it's counterfeit. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I guess we can celebrate it, but it's like, we need to like talk to Aaron about
I just don't think being off LSD with no lights is a recipe for success.
I'm not suggesting that without God you can achieve the true spiritual alignment. It is I think we all are on the same page that God is central to that. He is that experience. But what I do think is there seems to be a cultural void that I don't want to stereotype the church, but obviously there's a moment happening right now where more and more people are seeking spiritual clarity, not through some, overnight, little miracle thing. Right. They're willing to subject themselves to truly challenging experiences with the hope that they will become a better person from the inside out. That impulse, I think, is positive, even if the places they're looking aren't the places that I think, people in the Christian tradition would look,
Because you're saying eventually it would lead them to the truth of Jesus. Like you're saying eventually, hopefully that road would lead there.
If the church does its job, and by the church, I mean big C, everyday people, not necessarily the institution, not some church, right? But I think the job of Christians is to find people who are seeking truth. And with the guidance of the Holy Spirit, to point them in the direction of the truth they're looking for. Like that's our role, right? And I think if it starts with that impulse and there's all these people in culture that are looking at people like Aaron Rodgers that are seeking truth and saying, look, I'm going to read this book and my life's going to be better. I'm willing to subject myself to spiritual disciplines or activities that I think is going to give me clarity. That's where I feel like there's an entry point to have bigger conversations about what it could look like in sort of a biblical approach,
Look, the Bible is clear. It says the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. So Jesse, I totally agree with you. My only pushback is against doing LSD with sensory deprivation. Like just as long as you can do, if you do one or the other, if you go to spirit, I'm just saying, just for your sanity's sake, don't do both at the same time.
But maybe he might see Jesus walk into that dark cabin.
No, not off LSD with no dark with darkness. That ain't finna happen.
You do hear a lot of stories of these people that go out, to Joshua Tree and they have some sort of psychedelic experience that they have a spiritual encounter and an enlightenment moment, and it actually opens up their heart and mind to the reality of God. They come back and go, "No, God is real." I was a skeptic before.
Well, if anyone, has concerns with what I'm saying, do a little research about the history of the Desert Fathers. And, there are actual Christian mystics in church history that, some of them, and I'm not endorsing this, but people can go read about it. There are sects of them that, experimented with psychedelics as a sort of sacrament because it was thought it could enhance their...
We're not talking about sex.
I heard him. He's talking about sex.
He said there's sex.
He says sacrament.
No, he said S-E-C-T-S. I was joking.
Oh,
yeah, sex of the Desert Fathers and that legitimately embraced this sort of Christian mysticism. I'm just saying there's a precedent for it that's interesting.
So you're saying sex and drugs will lead people to Jesus
in the
desert, in the dark.
That's exactly what I'm
Delete the whole episode.
It's even better if you're listening to Sam Smith the entire time. You know, if you have on your AirPods.
On a loop.
Oh my God.
Delete.
Filter into Map City every once in a while.
Everybody at home, I am so sorry that you have been subjected to this. I'm
and
not
people
a part
don't
of
understand
this.
Sarcasm.
It's Jamie Ivy and Jesse in camera. They don't have nothing to do with me because I know somehow I'm gonna get blamed.
You're gonna get blamed.
So look, I'm just
Derek endorses
know.
The Grammys and the relevant Derek. Podcast. He's okay with all the profane stuff. All right, what do you have, Jamie? We're in
okay,
slices
well,
still.
Speaking of this is coming into a football podcast all of a sudden. But speaking of football, I know the Super Bowl was on Sunday, and I read an article. Actually, you guys are covering it relevant. Actually, about in the state of Tennessee, they're trying to make the Monday after the Super Bowl a Super Bowl Monday holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Derek, that's your state. How you feel about this?
Let's go. Anytime that I get to take off of work, well, I mean, I work for myself, but anytime that the normal man could take off from work, I'm with it. Let's do it after Monday. Let's do it.
Well, you know why they said it?
They said that. Oh, sorry, that 16 million Americans are expected to skip work the day after the Super Bowl, and 8 million are expected to ask for the day off in advance. And so they're saying it's going to affect our workforce anyways. No one's going to work on Monday. And here's the good news, guys. I'm for this. He wants to replace Columbus Day with Super Bowl Monday, which I'm like, yes,
run it up.
That sounds like a great idea to me.
Mm-hmm. Run it up. I think that's awesome.
The data is true. It's something like half, 40 to 50% of the American workforce does not go to work the Monday after Super Bowl. It's just proven now. So why not just make it a holiday? You can't add an extra free bank holiday. So let's take Columbus Day away. Perfect.
I love it.
Done.
I love it. Yeah.
Go Tennessee. Look at Tennessee leading the way.
Go Tennessee leading the way.
We are leading the way in the things that count.
There you go.
We are leading the way in the things that count.
All right. What do you have, Derek?
So 1/3 of millennials still rely on their parents to help with bills.
Oh, gosh.
Millennials being 27 to 40 years
old. Actual millennials. The millennials.
Yeah. Right. 27 That's to 40 old. Is millennials. Yeah. Millennials. 27 to 42.
27
maybe.
Is the lowest entry look, bar to be.
Look, if their parents are offering, what's the big deal?
Yeah. But more than 10% was the parents pay their rent. Like, it's not like they're paying Netflix.
Again, if my parents were like, hey, we're gonna hook you up.
You're 42 years old and you need your parents to pay your rent?
I don't need to, but if they're offering.
Jesse, we're not saying like, oh, I'm down on my luck.
Yeah.
I need a little help this month.
Right.
We are talking about auto draft.
Yeah. This bill is
being auto draft monthly out of your account. 35% of adults have at least one bill that's still on their parents' tab.
Isn't that crazy?
But here's the crazy part about it. With that, yet, despite not managing all of their expenses, 85% of the respondents consider themselves to be financially responsible, with 65% considering having a good credit score as an indicator of financial responsibility.
What could be more financially responsible
than having your parents pay your bills?
Than not reminding your parents, like, hey, I'm still on your cell phone. Because you know they ain't looking. They don't even have a check, right? Like, half of them can't even log in to their provider. If they don't know, what that seems financially irresponsible.
Okay.
If you just...
There's definitely some parents that don't even know. Okay. They're just paying like their cell phone bill every month. Yep. And they don't even know that their three kids who are 40 and 37 with three children, they're paying their own cell phone.
I had a friend who had a gas card, real quick, had a gas card from their parents' business or whatever. And they kept that thing deep in the 20s. And I was like, are your parents still cool with it? He's like, I don't even know if they know I still have it. All I know is I use it to fill my tank. And hey, I'm not going to stand in the way of that.
Here's the counterpoint to your point on that being financially responsible. So look, another factor behind young adults staying on their parents' bill is due to delay in pursuing financial responsibility. 73% of respondents said they opened their first bank account by 25.
What?
50% struggle with limiting unnecessary spending. and 45% struggle with budgeting for unexpected expenses, and 40% struggle to remember to pay bills on time. So no, this is not the gas card thing. This is, I'm living my life and mama and daddy don't want me to go under, so they just go ahead and take the bill for me.
Wow.
That's what that is. First bank account by 25 years old.
My daughter's 15 and has a bank account. Like, this is, if you're babysitting, you need a bank account.
What people need to remember is, like, we're talking millennials. Millennials are, by definition, 27 to 42 or 44.
It's not kids. Right.
It's not kids. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, Gen Z is up to 26 now. But, like, that's crazy to me that how a third or whatever is still receiving financial support from their parents and they're straight up 30s. That is just...
Good for them. Good for them.
But I am not going to lie. If I still had a card of my parents and they didn't know it, and every once in a while I filled up my tank of gas, I think I would still do it just because I'm like, oh, I guess my parents are just, okay, they're just kind.
Look, okay, my in-laws live in like New York, New Jersey area, and there's a lot of tolls, and so they have easy passes on their car. I have one toll in my area. And they said, hey, just use our easy pass so I don't have to worry about it because I only go through every once in a while. I'm not going to turn that down.
It's like $1.50. Why can't you just get your
own? It costs $10 to go across the Bay Bridge Tunnel. 10 wow. each way. It's wow. If you want to go back and forth these shorts, $20.
So you need your parents to pay that?
Thanks, Russ and Yvonne. Appreciate that easy pass.
Well, Russ and Yvonne volunteered. So he's like, I'm not going to turn
that's
that down.
That's what I'm saying. What's the difference? Jesse, it's a matter of scale.
Jesse is literally part of this study. He is literally a millennial getting support.
I'm doing everything wrong.
That's right.
I'm doing everything wrong. It's all wrong.
We're family.
I'm doing it all wrong.
We're family.
I'm doing it all wrong.
All right. Well, that'll do it for Slices. Stay tuned. Up next, Dante Stewart joins us. You're listening to Soccer Mommy. The song is Shotgun.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, if you like this podcast, but you might like it better if there were no ads, you can do that. Head over to relevantmagazine.com and sign up for Relevant Plus. For just a couple bucks a month, you get this podcast ad-free. You get ad-free unlimited reading at relevantmagazine.com, including the full podcast and magazine archives, our beautifully designed digital issue, and a little more. Check out all the info right there on the Relevant Plus tab at relevantmagazine.com.
Well, our guest today is Dante Stewart. He's a pastor in Augusta, Georgia, and a writer who's been published in The Atlantic, New York Times, CNN, a lot more. He sat down with Downtown Emily Brown to discuss the reality of racial justice in America today and how the church can move forward united in love and justice. Here's our conversation with Dante Stewart.
It just really seems like everything that you fight for and you advocate for is really coming from a place of love, not to like discredit anyone else's advocacy, but there are times where you can tell it's coming from different places. I just always appreciate that yours comes from truly just you love God's people and you want them to be healthy and whole and living. And so, you know, I'm just curious, like, how do you make sure that you're always, everything you say and do and you advocate for is coming from that place of love?
I don't know if it's necessarily, I'm always cognizant of, I'm doing this out of love. You know, I'm doing it because it feels right. You know, and I'm doing it because my soul testified that something must be said or done. You know, I'm doing what I do because I know what God has done for me. I'm doing what I do because I know the type of people that I come from. My granddaddy, who passed in 2022, who passed last year, God rest his soul. My granddaddy would have to walk miles and miles and miles as a young kid because they wouldn't send school buses to where he lived. And then when it came time for the Voting Rights Act to be passed and the news got down to those rural communities in the South, my granddaddy would gather up people inside of his truck and take them to go vote, to be registered to vote. My granddaddy also was someone who would go to the school board meetings and raise hell, you know, about the ways that, you know, they were not taking care of children or families that look like him, you know, and things like that. So, you know, I don't know if my granddaddy was always conscious of saying, you know, I love, I'm a person of love. I wanted to do this, you know, out of love, you know, I want to do it because it's right. And oftentimes I do it until I feel love. I don't do it from love. I do it until, you know, I think love is not necessarily about disposition, but it's also particularly about, you know, a sort of type of destiny and endurance and a direction. So it is when, for me, I'm trying to live as whole as possible, trying to do the things that make my soul come alive, as Reverend Katie Cannon would say. I'm trying to, you know, share stories that are oftentimes marginalized. I'm trying to write creative things and do creative things and be a dependable presence, as Rowan Williams would suggest in his book, Being Christians. I want to be a dependable presence in this world. And that, I don't know, I'm not always conscious of, okay, hey, I'm loving, you know, this person, because oftentimes one does not love a person or a thing they don't know, you know, so it's hard to say, okay, I'm doing this out of love, but I am doing this because it's the right thing to do.
It's more, I've just always noticed, like, the way that you just discuss things, that you can just, it, to me, it is very evident that you are doing things from love. And so I kind of love that it's not necessarily a conscious effort. It really is just like an overflow of your character and who you are. It just, it does come off as very loving. So
thank you. And I do try to be that. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I do try to be loving. I ain't gonna lie. You know, because I do think that, like, so many people have been so hurt by mm-hmm. the church. You know, one of my friends, Jason, said this, and it never left me. That he said oftentimes when he was a youngin growing up in DC, and would go to church and do poetry nights at church and things like that. Church for him was a place where his faith didn't come to live, but oftentimes it was a place where his faith came to mm-hmm. die. And I think we as Christians, you know, take for granted how often people experience that, whether it be on social media, whether it be in real life, whether it be, you know, just in our friendships and our social networks. Oftentimes the experience have been where Christians have not been people where people's faith can come alive, but where their faith goes to die. And I think we as Christians should try and do a better job of being good in the world. You know, there's that theology that says, that suggests there's no good thing in human beings. I just don't believe that. When we don't believe, as Maya Angelou would say, you tell somebody, you know, they are nothing. They're worth nothing. They account for nothing. Then eventually they're going to believe it. You tell Christians long enough, there is no one good. There is nothing good that can come from human beings unless the Spirit makes it alive, et cetera, et cetera. Then Christians will believe it, that they cannot be good in the world. And I wonder if that's the case for so many of us. We have believed the theology that would say there is nothing good that can come from you. Therefore, good does not come from us. And that we as Christians need to reframe that and be better and be good. Be the good people that God wants us to be.
I think putting things on, I think so many people, they want to see things happen at an institutional level because they know it'll force things to happen. But we don't get there without, like you said, a lot of it starts with the individual slowly getting momentum and growing in these groups and stuff. So I don't know. I think that's a good perspective to have, because like I said, I just know a lot of people, they want change to happen, but I think they want it to happen at the institutional level without having to do some individual work as well. Mm-hmm. And
I don't think anything is wrong with that, really. I really don't. I think that's actually good to want change at the institutional level, because when you look at the history of America, the history of America has been a history of people wanting change at an institutional level. And that fueled individuals on an individual level to accomplish things in their own local places. Or now, as we exist in the digital world, that allow us to kind of create change in our own kind of digital and social environments. And so I think that it's good and right to want institutional change. I want institutional change. I don't want a cop to be able to kill me at will. I don't want people to have their health care taken away or people's choices to be limited. And that's an institutional thing. Like it's just like, it was Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael, who said, you know, if a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem. But if a white man has the power to lynch me, that's my problem. Racism is not about attitudes. It is about power. And to go even further, power isn't just about individual choice or individual relations. Power is about what the space institutions give individuals to function within the world. So I think individuals need to want institutional change so that our individual lives can be better institutionally. Mm-hmm. You know, so I want my child to live. Right. I want a Tatiana Jefferson to live. I tell you, these people are dead because institutions have given individuals too much power. And so we want them to be alive and be protected. I don't want my kids to have curriculum like taken away from him to learn about people who look like him. I don't want white kids to have the ability to become more loving taken away from them. That is an institutional problem. And I think we should want institutional change. Nothing is wrong with that. I think it's a blending of both. I don't think it's a binary. I think it's a blending of both. It's like Jesus. You know, Jesus both individually healed people, but also drove people out of the temple. Jesus both defied Roman occupation and power, but also invested deeply in the lives of his disciples. And so we see this theology really in history, this tradition of, you know, the political and the spiritual, you know, the social and the kind of church-wise, whatever. You know, I think we as human beings, and especially people of faith, should find a way to integrate, not try and find like a balance, oh, is somebody doing too much of this or do I say integration. You know, we want to live whole lives, so therefore we have to have a whole ethic.
That was Dante Stewart. Make sure to check out his book, Shouting in the Fire, An American Epistle, available now. All right, stay tuned up next. It's The Game, Worship or Ruling.
Lay to rest your fears and doubts. It's tense.
You're listening to Fum Viferit. The song is Healing House.
Well, Relevant has a lot happening this year, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter right there on the front page at relevantmagazine.com, and we'll send you our top five trending stories into your inbox every weekday. We'll also send you a weekly podcast newsletter with the latest episodes, some fan extras, and first peeks at the new shows that we're going to be rolling out throughout this year. Make sure to sign up. It's the best way to keep in touch with everything we got going on.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, it's time for
Worship or wooing.
Valentine's Day is upon us, so we wanted to do a game that was love themed. And so here's the intro that Emily wrote. It's no secret that many worship songs could double as love songs and vice versa. It's not a total surprise. God is love after all. But some of the lyrics and worship songs that get dangerously close to crossing the line from being a holy praise filled to song to being a declaration of love to, well, anyone you want. Yeah, the whole Jesus is my boyfriend thing. In honor of the day of love being upon us, we decided to play a game where you will have to figure out if this line is from a worship song or a love song. I'll read a lyric out loud to each of you to guess. We'll play a few rounds, see who knows their worship from their love. Here we go. Jesse, you're up first. Here's the lyric. Your love is one in a million. It goes on and on and on.
I'm gonna say that's a love song to a romantic interest.
It's Aaliyah, correct. There you go. Oh.
Too much. There's a lot of body rolling on this. If y'all saw the comment, a lot of body rolling. If y'all were watching.
All right, Derek, you're up. Here we go. Your fragrance is intoxicating in our secret place.
Oh wow.
I mean, secret place sounds like worship song. So
your fragrance is intoxicating in our secret place. So you're saying worship?
That sounds like the cover of a Valentine's Day card right there.
That sounds like a socially awkward person trying to talk about God.
Okay. Your fragrance is intoxicating. It's Casting Crowns. It's a worship song.
Wow.
Casting Crowns. There you go. You guys are both right. All right. You're up, Jamie. Your voice is warm and tender, a love that I could not forsake.
That's definitely a worship song.
Celine Dion.
Is that Celine
Dion? The power of love. The power of love.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
All right. Round one is done. Help me out with the score, Jason, but it's Jesse and Derek have 1 point. Here we go. Yep. Round two, 2 points each. Here we go. Jesse, you're up. People think I'm crazy the way I'm acting lately. That's true. I'm crazy about you.
That sounds like romance to me. People
think I'm crazy for the way I'm acting. Chris Tomlin.
That's Chris Tomlin.
Chris Tomlin. Chris Tomlin says Christian song.
What is it, like Chris Tomlin gone country? What was that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never heard that in my life.
What was that? Please never play it again.
Never. All right. Dude, you know, Chris Tomlin, like, what was it, 5 years ago? You know, the CCLI. There was 1 year that the CCLI paid out $20 million of licensing for worship artists from the Sunday services and stuff. $15 million of the $20 million was earned by Chris Tomlin that year.
Run it up.
No crazy. Doubt.
Run it up.
He can do you all the country he wants. That man
there
can country all the way to the bank.
Yeah, why not? Yep.
All right.
Run it up.
Derek, you're up. Here we go. These are 2 points. Lay back against you and breathe. Feel your heartbeat. This love is so deep. It's more than I can stand.
I want it to be a romance song because that just made me uncomfortable when he's talking about God. So we go say it's a romance song. Lay
back against you. It's a worship song by Hannah McClure.
Hannah, you was in your bag on that one. I don't know what bag you was in, but you was in it. Good.
She just came out of 4-day darkness retreat. She's like, oh man,
off to LSD.
All right, Jamie, you can take the lead if you get this one right. Here we
I'm
go.
I'm ready. I'm going to take the lead right now.
In a way, I know my heart is waking up as all the walls come tumbling down.
That's definitely a worship song. Straight to Jesus. Tearing down the walls. In a way,
I know my Faith Hill. Breathe.
Faith Hill.
As all the walls she got you. Faith got you.
That does sound like a worship song, though.
Yeah. That's funny. Mm-hmm.
All right, round three. These are worth
That's
3 points
it's
each.
The same writers.
That's right. It
it's
is.
All the same writers.
It is. Yeah. That's funny. All right, here we go. Jesse, these are worth 3 points each. Here we go. How deep is your love? Is it like the ocean? Pull me closer again.
I feel like it's a worship song, but I'm going to go against my gut and say it's a romance one. I feel like mm-hmm. this is a trick one. How
deep is your love? Calvin Harris. Is it like the ocean? Pull me closer
again. How deep is your love? If this could, to be fair, even mm-hmm. even that, I can be like, that's Young and Free.
Yeah,
Young and Free for a while. They can
that
put
was
out
young
like,
and free.
Yeah, you're like a melody in my head that I can't get out every day. Nah. Like yeah. my iPod stuck on replay. If they put that out, I'd be like, that's pretty catchy worship jam you got there.
Yep. All right, Derek, you're up. Here we go. 3 points each. I want to know you more. I want to touch you.
We gonna go with awkward worship song for 10, Alex.
You're right. Sonic Flood.
Oh my God.
Worship song.
That's when I started following Jesus. This is the kind of music I was worshiping to.
She was drawn in by the whole. I get to touch him.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right, Jamie, you're up 3 points each. Here we go.
Raise to God. I promise.
No, I have 0 points. I have 0 points, and I'm the only one on this panel married to someone who writes worship songs.
Come on now. Come on.
Raise my hands, paint my spirit gold, and bow my head. Keep my heart slow.
So every time I have heard, I've had Faith, I've had Celine Dion. I'm gonna go and say this is a romantic song. I'm gonna step out here.
Oh! Mumford and Sons.
Yes.
You know that I was at a Mumford and Sons concert, and like when the crowd sings that with their hands out, it is a worship song.
It feels
song.
Like worship, yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, all right.
Does
so we got four, and three. No, you're at three.
Okay.
That was a 3-pointer. So 4-4 and three.
Pointers, okay.
Last round. These are worth 5 points each. So it's still anybody's game. Here we go, Jesse. I'm desperate for you. I'm lost without you.
Definitely worship. Passion, I think.
Paul McClure.
I remember.
It is a worship song.
Yep.
I love that song. Bring it back. That's a good song. All right. Yeah. Derek, you're up. 5 points each. Here we go. As I feel your touch, you bring a freedom to all that's within.
Romance.
As I
feel it's worship. Matt Redman.
You bring a freedom.
Yeah, Matt Redman. There you go. Pour Out My Heart. It's a song. All right, Jamie, here we go. Everywhere I'm looking now, I'm surrounded by your embrace.
This is going to be worship. I'm going with worship.
Beyonce. Halo.
Okay.
Well, Jesse, you won. Victor, I got
good
way
job,
more.
Jesse.
We could keep going.
You.
This is great. I mean, literally, I've got like five more rounds.
Bring it
this
back.
Is good.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was called Worship or Wooing. Yeah, we will definitely do round two next week. That was a lot of fun. And there's a lot more to go. So great job, Emily and Jason. Okay, well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Dante Stort for joining us. Make sure to check out his book, Shouting in the Fire, An American Epistle. It's out now. And check out, if you go to his website, DanteStewart.com, it lists like he's written a lot. you should go check it out. He's an amazing writer. All right. Listen, while you're online, you're checking stuff out, go check out relevantmagazine.com. If you like this podcast and don't like all the ads, well, guess what? That's how it pays for it. That's how we pay for it. If you don't want the ads, that's fine too. There's another way to pay for it. You can sign up for Relevant Plus. Relevant Plus is our ad-free content experience, our ad-free membership. You get this podcast ad-free. You get an exclusive subscriber podcast each week. You get ad-free unlimited reading at relevantmagazine.com, our enhanced digital edition, and more throughout this year. Plans start as low as $250 a month. We think you'll like it. Also, you can find out all the info by clicking the Relevant Plus tab there at relevantmagazine.com. While you're at the site, make sure to check out our issue 111 digital issue. We are working on our issue 112 right now. I'm very excited about how it's shaping up. I can't wait for you to see it. But if you haven't gotten experienced 111 yet, you should. It's got an amazing cover story with MIA and a whole lot more content. You want to not miss it. If you want to stay in touch with what we're doing, follow us on all the socials. And you can also sign up for our daily newsletter right there on the homepage at relevantmagazine.com. We send you our top five trending stories to your inbox every weekday morning. It's a great way to stay in touch with what we're doing. Just the best of the best. Cutting out all that riffraff. Just the top five. Okay. On that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm Derek Miner.
We will see you guys on Friday. Have a great week, everyone.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
It's theatrics.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Save big money on your next project. Now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on menards.com. For all the great deals happening now. Save.